What do you do when you create something that has copyright implications? I had a coffee in the farmhouse kitchen of Claire Barker and talked about hares, Ted Hughes and juggling livestock and children.
I contacted the estate of Ted Hughes because I found their address online and grovelled and said, I know I'm nobody and Ted Hughes is everybody. He's a fantastic, famous, wonderful writer. Would you mind if I did a couple of prints with the poem in the background? And to my absolute amazement, they went, well, send us a copy and we'll see what it looks like. And they came back the same day with, we love it, can we order some prints? And it just went really, really smoothly. And Carol Hughes, Ted Hughes' widow, really liked it as well. So it just moved very quickly. It's very easy. They're absolutely delightful people.
That's surprising, isn't it?
It's very surprising, because I thought they'd be all officious. And they had every right to be, but no, they were really very encouraging. I think they wanted to see the work in a particular context. That's what they liked. And the fact that I wasn't illustrating Ted Hughes' poem, because apparently Ted Hughes didn't really like illustrations of his poems. He thought it was a bit trite. But what it does is, because I painted the hare first and then I found the poem, it's as if there's a tension between the words and the image, which give it extra life that wasn't there before. The two work very, they work alongside each other rather than it being a straight illustration of the poem.
So the words are an important part of the,
oh,
of
hugely,
the whole thing.
Hugely important part, yeah, I'd say.
Because you do lots of illustrations for books, don't you, and stuff,
yeah,
kiddies books.
Yeah.
Something to do with frogs?
Yeah, I did a book called What a Frog for Hachette. And it's just a children's reading book, you know, that kind of key stage two sort of age, really. And that was a real learning curve, because I hadn't done anything like that before. Having to produce the same image, or the same character again and again and again in different situations was... I thought it'd be brilliant, but it was really painful. Really, really painful having to do that. And it taught me an awful lot. I think it really focused me on the idea of maybe what I like to do is I like to paint one-offs.
Right.
Because as time goes on, as you paint all the different frames that character's in, that character gets smoother and smoother and better and better. But I just personally feel, for me, it just loses that life as you go along, and which you don't get with one-offs.
So you actually do illustrate it sort of by hand? You don't use computers and stuff to illustrate?
Well, I know how to use a computer to illustrate with, but with that particular one, I just don't think there's enough hand-done stuff around. And that if you can do it, then you should do it, at least sometimes. But it does make it far more time-consuming. But no, I just did those just watercolour illustrations, and then they went off to the publishers and they did all the book layout and everything. But next time I might be tempted to do a computer thing instead.
But I know, I thought they looked quite good, really. I quite like the frogs. They appealed to me.
the grumpy judges.
Yes, I appealed to them, you know, sort of bouncing around and not actually getting anywhere, really.
No. No, but I did it. Everything was about frogs for a while. It was quite intensive. I had this image of what a children's book illustration, what it would be like, that it would be, I don't know, gorgeous and fragrant, and not really me sitting at my desk at 4 o'clock in the morning tearing my hair out trying to get everything done. And it's quite stressful, really. But again, that's because that was my first publisher job. And when I went to college and did illustration, they were very clear on the fact that although we were all doing this illustration course, we must all accept that none of us would be professional illustrators.
So that was a good start then, wasn't it? You actually went into a profession with no aspirations of success.
With absolutely no aspirations of success, and absolutely being absolutely astounded when it started to work. And
So where did you study illustration?
North Devon College. I went along. It was when I was living in Dartmouth and we were moving up here to North Devon, and I just happened. I thought, oh, I'd love to do illustration, because I'd been doing little watercolours for Daisy's. It's my was then 6-year-old daughter's lunchbox, because she didn't like eating lunch. So I used to do these tiny little watercolour illustrations every day that would encourage her to get out her lunchbox and look at the picture. The word of it kind of spread, and it got to the point where the dinner hall, children weren't leaving because they were all queuing up to look at the little picture in the lunchbox. And I thought, well, I like doing this is good. And then I looked up illustration courses, and there happened to be one in North Devon where we were going in Barnstaple. So I signed up and I went there for, it was a 2-year course, and it was a great course in that I met some very, very interesting people, and I had a great lecturer who actually illustrated one of Ted Hughes' early poetry books. I think he illustrated Crow.
Oh, right, okay.
So that seed was set in my head. I just thought, that is the coolest thing I have ever heard.
So you've actually gone one better than him, then?
Oh, well, no, not really. I mean, his is an enormously... I think it's in the 60s it was published. And he's a printmaker, and they're very black and white. It's very... And I actually found out later on, through the solicitors, through the whole Ted Hughes thing, that that book was one of the first gifts that Ted Hughes gave to Carol Hughes when he first met her. So there's all this kind of connection, people knowing people, and I like that. I like that very much.
Because in most of your work, you do a lot of paintings and stuff, and I've seen, well, in fact, we've exhibited together, haven't we?
We have.
We've had stuff exhibited in the same place. And most of your stuff has got words written around it.
Yeah.
I sometimes wonder why they have to have words around them.
Well, I had this real thing about words, which was... Because I love words, because my first degree is in English literature, or first degree, like I've got more than one, but my degree, before I did any of the illustration, was in English literature. I love words, and that, because I love pictures, illustration was the natural way to go. And then when I was doing illustration, I found myself doing this thing with this writing and the image, and it would just make things come to life. But as time is going on, I'm starting to move away from the words now. The last few paintings that I've done haven't got any words in them. Although, I have to fight the temptation at the end to just go and get the white acrylic ink and write some words. But I don't. I've managed to try and rein it in. Maybe it goes back to those lunchbox pictures. I love to rip around the edge. I don't like the straight edges. It sort of robs some of the life of it when there are straight edges. But now, because I'm doing proper giclée prints, and so everything's very smart and sharp-edged and lovely. But I do have a tendency to... I do err on the side of mess.
And a lot of your stuff is actually quite dark, isn't it? It's quite moody, and it's almost gothic in a sort of...
Somebody said that!
In a rural context.
Somebody said that. Yeah... Yes, it probably sort of is. And that was one of the great things about doing illustration at college and that lecture I was talking about. Because I would produce things that I thought were going to be vaguely okay and good. And he would just look at it and grump until I started to come up with the darker stuff. That's what he wanted. And it was just this river in me, all this dark stuff. I love darker literature, or rather sweet things that have a poignancy to them. Say, for example, Oscar Wilde. Oscar Wilde's fairy tales. That was a big inspiration for me, because they are these sort of... They appear to be quite sweet, and then some of them are just full of sort of twisted bitterness or disappointment. And I love, again, it's that disparity between the two, the tension between the two that makes something real. That's what I like.
Yes. No, it's like, you know, I've seen stuff that you've done of really quite pretty flowers in fields. But I'm always expecting to sort of like for a bee to fly out and sting me on the nose.
Bees. I'm thinking about bees actually. Yeah, bees and the savageness of bees. I think what lots of my pictures now, the ones of there's one of a rooster, which down there was the brown hair, and then I've done one recently of a sheep. I don't know if you've seen, there's a black sheep.
I've not seen the sheep, no. Well, it would have to be a black sheep.
It would have to be a black sheep, but it can be a white sheep. Oh, no, I don't think... Well, this is what I remember saying this ages ago to Ronnie, which was whenever I do a sweet picture, I feel like I have to go and do a dark version of it. So I remember doing a beach hut.
That's right.
And then I have to do a dark version of that in dark tones.
Yeah.
And then I feel... Phew. I'm not really a murderer or anything. I think things can be interesting and good, and they don't have to be sweet. But I think that's a journey I've had to come on.
Yeah, I think there probably was something very dark and horrible in your dark beach hut. It wasn't a place where I'd like to spend my summer.
What, the dark hut?
No.
No, the dark clouds over it as well.
Yeah, it's quite...
Yeah.
Gormenghast.
Yeah, exactly. Gormenghast. Isn't that fabulous? that gothic weirdness sort of horror does appeal to me. I'd have to say I was really influenced by the likes of Tim Burton as well, and that beauty mixed with hideousness, the Beauty and the Beast thing, I really like that. But the animals that I'm doing now, they all look at you like they might bite you, which I really, really like that.
Have you ever been bitten by a sheep?
Yes, actually, they scrape you, don't they?
They
are
quite vicious creatures, yeah.
Yeah, they are quite, it's having a headbutt you as well. I've just been headbutted by a sheep in the barn a second ago, actually. I like to see in animals, I like to see their wild side. No, I'm surrounded by animals, got lots of animals. I don't really like the idea of animals as pets.
You've got all sorts of, I've just been attacked by your geese as I drove into your drive.
That's
you've
another
got
the one I'm going to do, goose.
You've got, there's all the sheep.
Geese.
Lambs.
Baby lambs we've got, they're very sweet. Pigs sometimes. Hamster in the back room and there. Cat, dog. About 30 chickens.
And children. So how do you juggle all this sort of... Yes, you went to a trap then, didn't you?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. How do I juggle it all? I don't. I just spend a lot of time being quite angry and frustrated. It's this idea of, you know, and then I will be a mother and then I will stay at home and I will do illustrations and I will paint and it will be gorgeous and fragrant. I listened to an interview on Radio 4 a while ago with this lady who's a sculptor. I can't remember her name. It's a woman's hour thing. And she was saying that she felt that being a woman and an artist just felt they were incompatible with each other. If a man is an artist, a man can give himself to that, whereas a woman has these parts of her life that are punctuated by actually having to give birth and raise children. And there's something about being an artist, you have to actually put yourself right into it.
So you think that's just more difficult for a woman than it is for a man?
I think that probably depends on how good a father you are. Because I don't know, you're a very good father. But I think for a woman, it is difficult to do that. Because I can't bear the idea of turning around to my children going, no, I'm sorry, I can't talk to you for 4 days because I'm in the middle of this painting.
Yeah.
And no, I don't know where your socks are and
yeah.
I can't
And you don't care.
Yeah, and you don't care.
Yeah. In many respects, you have to compromise with everything, really.
Mm-hmm. But that's because they would come first. I could tip over the other side where I just went, no, the art side of things could come first. But I stop myself.
So do you think it would be better though if you did sort of, you know,
better just technically?
Yeah.
Yes.
Or do you feel that do you actually feel that having to divide yourself into 300 different pieces that probably that sort of...
That's an interesting idea actually, because I do remember when the girls were really small and being really tired, you know, doing the whole baby thing. And then getting it into my head, every so often I would get something into my head that I was going to make. I got into my head, I was going to make a quilt that had a mermaid swimming across it. And I was up at 3-4 in the morning sewing this thing every night. And I wouldn't have done that. I think if I'd had the space and time to do it, it would have been a longer project and then maybe I wouldn't have got round to it. But because time was so precious, it sort of lends an intensity to it, and those snatched moments of time are actually very creative in a way that perhaps they wouldn't be if I had all the time in the world. So do me a favour, really.
So if you had a massive studio with all your bits and pieces around and you lived in there, do you think it'd be any, would you think it'd be better or what? Do you have a studio? That's the important question, isn't it?
Do I have a studio? I have a table that's about 2 foot by 2 foot. No, I don't really have a studio. I could do with a studio at some point, and when the sheep are out, I might move into the barn. It's a bit chilly at this time of year. But that's a really interesting question, because I don't think I would be. I don't think I would be better. Because one of the things about being creative, I find, is that I need the stimulus of other people to make me want to do things. And that's one of the things about being at college was so good, was because I met so many interesting and unusual people. And whereas at first, when I first started, I just thought I'd be intimidated by them. I wasn't. They even though lots of them completely different to me, their enthusiasm for what they were doing really really fired me up about it. So being on my own with all this, with lots of gorgeous materials, probably bore me sense.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to admit this, but if I haven't got a studio, I'm better. But don't spread that around.
But do you think that's because if you've got a studio, you feel like you've got something to prove?
I think I personally, if I've got a studio, I end up cleaning it. I mean, it seems to be that, you know, it's just a chore to actually do anything. And I think in many respects, you know, like you were saying, with having, you know, bringing up children and looking after all the livestock, those little moments you do get to actually do something is actually quite, and not precious, but they become more important, don't they? So you have to get on and do it.
Yeah.
And I think if you do something as a job, so it would be a job, then it'd be 24 hours a day or whatever, then in many respects, that sort of purity and the preciousness. Not the preciousness, the urgency has gone, hasn't it?
Yeah, that's it. The urgency has gone. That's what I meant about the whole mermaid thing. That's very right. I should remind myself of that more often. I was looking at some adverts today because I was thinking about posting some adverts, and there was a painter. I thought, well, go and have a look at your website. And he said, you can contact me in my studio every day, 5 days of the week. And I thought, we're all sinking feeling. I thought, God, are you there 5 days a week? Really?
Get a life.
Oh, get out. You know, yes. Art in the community. It's about artists rather than the community. That we do need to get out and see
And meet other people.
Other people and see stuff and be inspired. And yeah, this inspiration I have for painting all these animals at the moment just comes from watching their behaviour and just, I mean, I'm really sad. I could stand and watch chickens for a good hour and not get bored. I find them really interesting.
Well, no, I can relate to that. I mean, because, you mean, you know, where you live is actually quite a beautiful place,
yes,
really.
Yes, very beautiful.
I mean,
very,
it's idyllic.
It is.
It's almost like a chocolate boxy type farmy thing, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And this is what I can't remember. I said this to you, is it to Jane, saying that it's almost as if I'm trying to create an illustration that I live in, and that I've got geese and I've got the chickens. Now, an interesting mix of very traditional breeds of chickens, so you know, it's got this. That's right for the picture. I've got the house that looks like this chocolate boxy kind of house, and I've got the sheep. And the pigs here, that's perfect. Though I was saying there's a horse-shaped hole, which I need to fill, really, but they're a bit expensive. But yes, it is like living in an illustration, like in a nursery rhyme.
You've got two perfect children.
Oh, they're perfect.
So, yeah, I can just imagine that, you know, sort of all the geese and stuff in this illustration would all have fangs, like vampires.
A fanged goose. Yeah, they should have fangs. If they had fangs, they'd be much more effective rather than this hissing thing that they do, this...
I mean, over the past sort of 2-3 months, your work has actually got about a lot, hasn't it? It's in shops. It's everywhere at the moment. Everywhere I go, I see your, I see that damn hair.
Damn hair.
Yeah. And you know, I was wondering, sort of, you know, how does that feel to actually be on the way up?
Feels really good. Today, the Hair Preservation Trust have asked if they can have some of my prints in their shop, and I contacted the River Cottage website. And they really like them, and they're going to talk to me about putting them in their Axminster store. And all these things feel, a year ago would have felt completely impossible and would have been a complete dream. And it is, it's a real exciting, it's a buzz. Although I know it's nicer to be on that up rather than, it's ridiculous, isn't it? But to be nobody, because I've always been nobody, and to be nobody with a bit of success, really cool. But now I'm just having to think about numbers and recommended retail prices, and you know, you can't be in the same picture, can't be in the same gallery in the same town. You know, all of these sorts of things that I didn't really understand, that I didn't take into consideration before, I have to think about, which means I'm not actually getting around to seeing much painting.
I was just going to say, so is the sort of success going back to the sort of, like, you know, with lots of children, lots of animals and lots of success, is all that? You know, does the success get in the way of actually doing new stuff?
Yes, but I'm not that successful yet. But I'm doing it in a short space of time. It seems to be taking off. They seem to appeal to people, to a big range of people.
Because when that painting was exhibited, when we exhibited that painting, you could have sold it 10, 15 times, couldn't you?
Yeah, I think so. I think lots and lots of people liked it. Yeah. But as you can see, he lives here.
I mean, I was talking to another chap the other day, and we were talking about video art and stuff, and he was saying that, you know, in many respects, you have to kill your babies. So in other words, do you think you shouldn't have the painting in your kitchen looking at us as we're talking about it? Do you think you should sort of like just get rid of it and then maybe
move on? Well, I got rid of the rooster yesterday. The rooster went to go and live with a friend because she bought it at the exhibition. And I did feel that kind of, feeling.
Because you do actually feel quite attached to your work, don't you? Yeah. It is a very personal, precious thing. I keep saying the word precious, but it is, isn't it? It's an important part of what you do. You like to keep tabs on everything.
I think it's very... I really like looking at other people's artwork because I always find it so interesting that it could be a picture of a landscape, it could be a picture of a horse, it could be a picture of a mouse, whatever. What I love is that you can look at that picture and you can see the person in it. Everything they paint is a version of themselves. And my pictures are all versions of me.
So you're frightened of actually giving pieces of you away?
Not frightened, but uncomfortable about it. Okay. Yeah, I'm continually astounded that other people are interested in my work. Because that's like them going that they're interested in me. Because these are just, they are like my children in a sense, you know. They're See, now you've got me in the bit where I start to sound mad now.
No, you don't sound mad at all. I mean, I think you're far from mad, really. I mean, I think you're very clever, and I think the way things are going, I think you've done very well. And no, it just fascinates me the fact that you are afraid to sell your babies.
Yeah, I don't even know why.
So what's the difference between a painting and a print?
I've signed the print, and it's all come from that original, but when I have the painting, I know where I was when I did that painting, and it's a tangible thing. And every time I look at them, I can remember exactly what I was feeling when I was painting them.
Okay.
And to say, right, be gone now and live in somebody else's house, it feels uncomfortable. However, somebody's prepared to offer me an enormous amount of money, you know, I'll seriously consider it, but I do feel a little uncomfortable.
See, I find that quite interesting because, I mean, you know, I just get rid of mine full stop because I just don't like them hanging around.
Yeah, but you're more prolific than me. I'm a bit slow.
I'm just not careful. No, but I mean, I understand perfectly the sort of, you know, I remember the moment when I made that sort of bit of green bit on that paint or that bit of blue bit on that paint. And even when I see them in other people's houses or wherever they are, I can remember when I did it. I do understand that sort of diary sort of aspect.
Diary, that's
towards painting. But I mean, I have to get rid of my stuff. Because if I keep it, then I just stop.
Because you look at it, do you mean?
Because I look at it too much, yeah.
And you're looking at it for the faults in it?
Yes, I want to alter it all the time. I want to alter them all the time. So I have to get...
You get a painting and then you change it after... That's interesting, because I'd never do that.
I have paintings that I've been going on for 3 or 4 years.
Really?
Yeah.
God.
But I don't tell anybody about it.
That'll be an edited bit.
Yeah, that's coming out.
But what an interesting idea that you would do that. Because that would not occur to me. I used to throw everything away before I went to college. Everything I drew, I just thought, throw it away. And then I went to college and they said, don't throw anything away. Because everything's always a reference and it's charting your progress. I used to hate anybody looking at my work. Because it just made me so vulnerable. Because I just couldn't bear it if someone was going to be unkind. I've been very fortunate. I haven't really had negativity. I've got much tougher than that now. Having done the illustration side of things, I'm quite used to rejections now. But it's interesting you saying about me not selling the originals on. Because I think that's a throwover from the illustration, because an illustrator doesn't. An illustrator keeps the originals, they retain the copyright, and then the publisher will buy... They don't buy the actual images. So you would have your bank of things. So, yeah, I think that's probably a throwover from that. I'm learning all the time about fine art and this idea that you would sell originals.
So do you think there's a difference between fine art and illustration?
Yes.
In what way would you say there's a difference?
Illustration... I'm an illustrator, so I'm going to listen to this, then I might get a bit narky, but I see illustration that it illustrates something. Its purpose is to succeed where the words have failed. They go hand in hand, whereas with fine art, you don't need that. There doesn't have to be a narrative with it. You should just get an oomph feeling from it. And I'm caught somewhere between the two stools.
Yeah.
Hence, that's me writing all over my pictures. It's a natural progression, I suppose, isn't it?
Well, I mean, I think any painting has a narrative, doesn't it? I mean, there is.
Yeah, but it doesn't need to be explained. Say one of your pictures. If I look at one of your paintings, I don't need to have a backstory to it to understand what's happening.
That's very, very generous.
No, it isn't.
Can you write it down?
It doesn't, because it gives you a feeling. Whereas an illustration, say you're talking about the frogs, and you've got the judges all sitting by the pool with arms folded, and the frog swimming across the lake. That's not going to give you a feeling, and that's why people like art. I think is because it will give them an abstract feeling. There's a painter I had a poster on my wall when I was a teenager, and I just picked it up from the art gallery in Plymouth, and I'd probably say his name incorrectly, because I only have it on my poster, and he was called Cy Twombly.
Yeah, Cy Twombly, yeah.
Cy, and it just, it had one called The Wild Shores of Love.
Yeah.
And it's got writing on it, see, and this rush of colour, and it just made me feel so good, this picture. And that's not illustration, that's fine art.
Right, yes. Yes and no.
Because the words are part of the art.
Yeah.
Rather than, if you're an illustrator, generally somebody else has done the story.
So basically what you're talking about is hybrids, isn't it? A hybrid of language and art. What always used to interest me was Robert Rauschenberg, and he used to have screen prints, and he used to screen print over his canvases, and there would be, I don't know, I can't remember exactly what they were, but there'd be like an image of a space rocket or something, and something else. And what he used to say was, as soon as you put two images together, you create a narrative, you create a dialogue. And so in many respects, I mean, that is a visual way of telling a narrative. And then by putting words with it, you create another narrative, don't you? So it is, there is a history of people mixing sort of languages together.
See, somebody like Blake as well. As in, like William Blake, Peter Blake, because he was very interested in words, and these illustrations that he did, but I don't see them as illustrations. I see them as art rather than illustrations, and the way he would use words within that, it just.
There's another scary gothic one, isn't there?
Yeah, I see influenced by Blake, but that's because all of this is my literature background coming together with a made-up art.
So have you ever thought about writing a book?
Funny you should say that, Peter, because...
Oh, no.
Funny you should say that. No, over there is my signed contract for my first children's book.
Okay, so that's written and illustrated.
Written and illustrated by me.
Fantastic.
Yes. But the good thing about it is that it's not... I haven't had to do that same character going all the way through.
Russ, isn't it?
There's just lots of different characters that I've illustrated. And letters, illustrated letters. And that should be coming out in 2010. Woohoo! And it's not dark.
No, not yet.
Not yet.
So there's going to be some hate letters written in this.
Yes, no, they're all a bit... Again, they're odd characters, though. They're they don't fit into the usual, typical mould. And I like that. I like the twist on things.
So what you're actually doing with the book, then, is you've got foot in each camp.
Yes.
And what you've been able to, if you like, genuinely... mix the two together.
Do my best.
So you have total, unlike the hair which is the Ted Hughes poem on the background, you're actually using your own words and your own illustrations.
Yes.
So do you see that as a way to actually express yourself correctly?
Do you remember me telling you about the hut? That we have the child hut.
Right.
And we have the dark hut.
Right. Yes.
And the children's book. That's the nicely coloured hat,
okay.
And the paintings of the dark hut, and it is the two sides. It's a bit schizo, isn't it, really? But it's like, at long last, I found a way of venting those two sides of my character, because they shouldn't really go together, but they do.
You say, well, I mean, you say that. I mean,
they wouldn't normally sit comfortably with each other. I don't think, being a children's writer.